afternoon. I think the camera's all set up and we're ready to go. I wanted to start and just kind of begin and tell you guys a little bit of story of, you know, why I'm sitting in front here and, you know, maybe why you guys are up here listening to me speak. About 4 years ago, I came to the first Black Hat Conference, and I came here, and it was an incredible, you know, an incredible sight. It's incredible to see how this conference has grown over the course of time. And I think it's important how I first got to speak and get introduced with Jeff Moss. About 4 years ago, I just started becoming an information security recruitment specialist, and I had taken a position, and I told my grandfather about what I was doing. And he went to the doctor's office, as all grandparents do, and he picked up a magazine, and on the magazine and the cover had this Forbes ASAP, and the cover was Digital Hitmen, and on that cover were four guys in black suits, outfits, AKAs, old nicknames and things like that. And one of those people happened to be Jeff Moss. Doing a little bit of social engineering, I finally had a chance to track down Jeff, and we started talking about the industry, and he gave me a bit of an education. I gave him a little bit of education about what we were doing. And we started a friendship over the course of time. And it just so happened that, you know, the next year, as DEF CON and Black Hat were approaching, my client had asked me to fly out to this conference to recruit Jeff and about three or four of his friends for an information security thought leadership type position. So my client was a really, you know, traditional Fortune 500, Big Five type corporate client with the suits and the ties, you know, and the dress codes and, you know, all the right paraphernalia. We went down and I pack up my two suits, put them in my briefcase, and I'm going down to DEF CON with suits. I was surprised nonetheless. I walked in there and in my suit and tie, if anybody's had a chance to experience DEF CON or if they're going to experience it this week. But if you walk into DEF CON, you see it's an amazing counterculture. It's something that you probably only can take in outside of a Grateful Dead concert. They have the clove cigarettes burning, the tattoos, Capture the Flag is going on 24/7. The black and white ball is something that, you know, if you have to see, you have to see. It was just amazing. And I'll never forget what it was like just walking in there and just feeling like an outsider within a world that was on its own. And it didn't really hit me too much until I was watching Hacker Jeopardy. And I was sitting here still in my suit and tie at night. And I get a tap on my shoulder. And I didn't know. I knew I didn't know anybody here. And I keep getting this tap on my shoulder. And I turn around, and it's this 15-year-old kid. I look at him, he looks at me, and then in one motion, he starts yelling, "I found the Fed, I found the Fed." And this, I didn't know what he meant by it, and I eventually learned, and it just became something where I realized walking in here that to really be able to understand information security professionals or understand this industry, you had to really understand the people. You had to really understand who's in this industry. You have to understand what motivates them, what drives them. And in the past 4 years, I've dedicated my time to really recruiting and learning and knowing this industry. And I'm the CEO of a company called LJ Kushner & Associates. We're a dedicated information security executive search firm. We work with clients across the country, over 60 of them, whether it's in the product space or the services arena, Fortune companies, pre-IPO companies. I've probably been involved in the placement of over 250 people in the last 4 years within this industry. I think that when you understand where we are as an industry at this point, you have to understand a bit of the history in the industry. I'm going to use this. Can you hear me with this mic? Okay, I'm going to use this one a little bit better. When it comes out to the history, you talk about four major aspects of this industry. You talk about 1996 and 1997, the formative years. In 1988, 1999, the industry hit a growth plan. Right now, what are we doing right now? And in the future, where are we going? Let's first talk about the formative years and how this industry really started to get to fruition. When I first started, nobody ever really heard about an information security recruiter or an information security recruitment specialist. The internet, as we know, it was just taking shape, and the majority of the information security professionals were either traditional ex-information systems auditors, or they were mainframe people with authentication and user administration background. NT was starting to gain market share from Novell, and the concepts of the firewall, intrusion detection, network scanning, all these concepts were pretty much embryonic and were first taking shape in the market. One key event happened in 1997 in February. Fortune magazine, which is read by every CEO, reads Fortune magazine. And on the cover of Fortune magazine, the title of the story was, "Who's reading your email?" And in there, it was took an in-depth look at a penetration study done by a Big Five firm and an information security intrusion detection company. And that was really what I would consider the shot heard around the world in the information security market space. CEOs started to realize that information security was going to appear on their radar, and at one point, whether it be sooner or later, they were going to have to do something about it. They were going to have to deal with it at some point. You know, this translated, you know, looking as CEOs and how they, when they started getting this glance of information security, they became very hesitant to share any information about threats or vulnerabilities or hack attempts on their own companies. They also were very leery of allowing outside consultants to do penetration studies or ethical hacks on their own networks to expose vulnerabilities. There was really a cause of fear, and that's how people sold information security. In the home, people started, you know, understanding information security as a general populace. Antivirus programs were sitting on everybody's desktop. People got hit by a virus. They lost a couple files. It was okay. As a whole, you know, the information security skills in this marketplace were pretty rare at the time. Not too many people had these skills, and the people who had these skills were very hard to find. So companies threw their arms up in the air. It was very hard to find these folks, and if you could find somebody with this type of skill set, you were really, you know, lucky. Now that you found them, it was pretty hard to retain them and keep them. I think afterwards, the market really starts to grow in 1998 and 1999. The internet as we know it starts changing our economy. Economists start looking at it as, you know, the old economy and the new economy. In fact, they even break up companies that way. You know, companies like Amazon, companies like Yahoo, companies like eBay, we're moving the stock market, you know, 40 points one day, 30 points the next day. Somebody that you know in your family or your circle of friends probably became an internet millionaire overnight. And that didn't leave the information security space unaffected. Companies like ISS, VeriSign, Checkpoint, people who worked at these companies in your space started to having these seven-figure payouts. And also when it happened, you know, people started to take notice, say, look, if it could happen to my friend, why can't it happen to me? In 1998 and 1999, companies like Accent and Network Associates started acquiring. The first point of acquisition and consolidation in the market space started to occur. They acquired other technologies so they can offer their companies best-of-breed products and best-of-breed services, a one-stop shopping method of information security products. The other thing is this, is that in reference to the firewall market, that starts to consolidate. Whereas in 1996 and 1997, you were looking at 30 to 35 different firewall products. In 1998 and 1999, that market was about five or six.
You also started to see some of the big boys get into the space. You started to see Cisco acquiring that small company featured in the Fortune magazine, the Wheel Group, for an exorbitant amount of money. You saw CA acquire Platinum, which had earlier that year acquired Memco. The other thing that really took place was that online transactions in the home, people started to understand security. What did it mean to them? Can I throw my credit card over the web? And it's people, because it related to people's willingness to purchase and do business, security started to be perceived as a marketing advantage as opposed to an insurance policy. Companies started to throw more money at this as a technology to improve their image and to increase their market share. On the recruitment front, competition increased. There was tremendous, the big consulting firms, they drove the market space up, offering huge salaries, trying to attract and maintain and corner the security consulting market space. These recruitment initiatives were predatorial at some points. In the services industry, in the product industry had to react to what the services industry was doing. They had to start offering a more creative compensation package. They fed off of the internet millionaires. They decided to sell, look, if you come to work here, you might not earn as much money as one of these big glory firms. However, you have a chance to be a millionaire. You have a chance for your financial freedom one day. As that came to happen, information security professionals, for the first time in their careers, had a choice. They can ask themselves two questions. Will I stay at a company, a larger company with more job security, or will I take a little bit of gamble, and will I maybe go into an environment where maybe I'm not getting as much as I think I'm worth? However, I have a chance for a big payday one day. So those questions really started to be asked, and they had to be answered. We move now to where we're on today, the year 2000. Where we are right now is at a crossroads. Information security and digital privacy are items that are firmly entrenched in the minds of CEOs. They realize that one event can mean the difference between the success and failure, not only of their company, but their own personal careers. One event, between the denial of service attacks in February and the I Love You virus in May, CEOs had to take notice of this. It became critical for them to how they position their companies. And what they've also realized is they realize that they cannot recruit people in-house to provide a comprehensive service. So what they have to do is they have to go outside. They're going to their trusted third parties. They're going to their professional services firms. You're seeing the development of managed service providers, application service providers, some of which are security specific, some of which are using security as a key angle in their marketing plans. With this realization that security is now mainstream, here come the venture capitalists. The venture capitalists are throwing tons of money into this space because they believe that they can make a lot of money here, especially in the services arena. In the services arena, you're seeing these pure play information security consulting firms start to grow. They're growing because these venture capital firms have been receiving tremendous paydays from e-commerce consulting firms like the Viants, the Science, the Sapiens. And these, which we've realized in the last 6 months here, in the last two quarters, where most of the dot-com companies, the retail B2C companies, have taken a turn for the worse, these professional services firms that offer e-commerce services have withheld and continue to grow. So if they believe that information security can follow the same exact model. When you also look at the services arena, then you have to start transitioning that to the product arena. Well, what's happening in the product space? The traditional security stalwart companies, the ones that have been around for a while, they're starting to realize that they have to have a different revenue model for their products. They can't just offer one-time buying of a product. It's not effective. It's unpredictable revenue. They're starting to move into the managed services space and trying to create some sort of residual revenue that Wall Street will buy and will continually drive their stock prices up. Also in the product space, you're also seeing new technologies come up that are kind of hybrids of some of the old technologies, whether it be air gap communication, air gap security, whether it be biometrics, whether it be intrusion prevention. All these different new technologies are new and improved versions of the old technologies. Since the market space has already been established, now it could be exploited by some of these new companies. What does that mean to the what does that mean to recruiting in this space, and what does it mean to talent? It means that these newer companies are tapping into the resource pool of these companies that established themselves in 96 and 97. People with information security experience are coming to these companies at a premium, and they're having to go out and two things. The old companies are trying to react, and they're trying to maintain, and they're trying to redesign their corporate cultures and redesign their lifestyle and redesign their compensation plans. These new companies are still predatorial. They're starting to attack these more established firms and trying to get the best talent, people who could bring business, people who can bring contacts, people who have an established record of success within this industry. We look at 2000, we have to kind of start thinking about where we're going as we start approaching 2001. What's going to happen in this marketplace? Let's look at it in two different directions. The first would be in the products. In the product space, you see the products or companies, there's going to be more consolidation. You're going to see consolidation from either one of two angles. You're going to see consolidation from either some of the larger players, the Suns, the Ciscos, the IBMs, acquiring these information security companies and putting that in their shopping cart that they can go out and sell to their internal client base already. You also potentially will see consolidation from players within the market space. You might see a merger of information security giants, maybe from the intrusion detection space and the PKI space, maybe the authentication space and the intrusion detection space. There is going to be some sort of an angle where the products start to merge. In the services space, the information security marketplace as we stand right now for services and integration work, professional consulting and integration work, is about a $2.5 billion a year industry. We've come to the big time. It's still the tip of the iceberg. By the year 2003, the industry will be somewhere between $5 billion and $7 billion in outsourced work. This means the venture capital community is going to continue to throw money because they're motivated by the fact that this is a fragmented industry. It could be easily duplicated, and the real challenge is finding the right talent. They can grow their companies one of two ways. They can grow their companies either by the way of acquisition, or they can grow their companies organically. When you talk about them growing their companies organically, by acquisition first, acquisition will be very tough because these small boutique consulting firms have an inflated self value. So it's more cost effective to the venture capital firms to buy the companies piece by piece and pay a premium for maybe their 8 to 10 top performers as opposed to buying the collective sum. Because when you buy a professional services firm, what you are buying is you're buying people and you are buying relationships. You're not buying a product. You're not buying anything that's proprietary. You're not buying anything that can't be duplicated. So the venture capitalist firms are now here, and they have the money in their coffers, and they're coming after people in the space. That brings us to a very interesting time. It brings us a time where there's a lot of opportunity out there. There's a lot of opportunity, which is a good thing. But there's also, with opportunity comes uncertainty too. And it brings you to a question of, where does this market sit? Where do you fit in the marketplace? How will you best judge where your career is going to get to? We start about dissecting the current marketplace. And what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to give you guys a very quick bulleted presentation about where we are in the market, the pros and the cons of these different opportunities. Just as a quick sketch, let's start with the corporate environments. Corporate environments, you break it down in three different areas. You have Fortune organizations, you have dot-coms, and you have the government. Let's talk about Fortune environments. First thing about it's good, it's predictable compensation. Your base salary is going to be good in a Fortune environment, and you know they're not going to go under at any point soon. Job security. Corporate environments are struggling to retain technology professionals. Without some major merger acquisition, you will always have a job in a Fortune company. You have the ability in a Fortune company to see projects to completion and to fruition. A lot of times you're able to see products from a concept stage to a design stage to an implementation stage, which is pretty rewarding because you can see the fruits of your labor. And the last thing is that there's going to be increasing importance in the information security arena for corporate environments. As more rules and mandates and government regulations come to pass, you're going to see information security positions escalate within these organizations. So that's a really good thing. As far as cons, you'll hear me talk about a couple of these repetitively. Security is not their business. Fortune companies either they sell cars, they sell books, they sell insurance, they sell banking products. They don't sell security. Security is not the reason that they're in business. Security is what they have to do to stay in business, but it's not a priority. It's still a cost factor in most of these companies. The second thing I'll tell you is B&B. And I could pretty much sum that up as the bureaucracy and BS. The larger the organization, the more bureaucracy you're going to have, the more politics you're going to have, the less effective, more time you're going to have fighting internal battles to who owns what, as opposed to being able to do the things that you enjoy to do. Lack of confidence. How many times do I hear that from information security managers that, you know, I made these recommendations 6 months ago, but they brought the consultants in and they said the same exact thing that I've been telling them 6 months ago, and now they're deciding to implement it. You know, the number one reason that people leave companies is not about money. It's because of recognition. And because these companies don't recognize these people in the organizations as talent, they do have a very big problem of retention. And the last thing is you're not special in these environments. We as information in this space, we like to think that we're different. We like to think that we're special. And we are. However, in a Fortune environment, you're another technology professional. And that's really the long and short of it. Let's talk about dot-com environments. In the dot-com environments, security professionals are important. If they are spending money to hire a security person, they need that person. That person is critical for their business. There's plenty of technology to play with. They're always trying to come up with something new that's different. That's how they're going to gain market share. And the third thing is, who wants to be a millionaire? It's the question we're all asking ourselves today. Options are definitely plenty and fruitful and, you know, could be very lucrative. Cons. Dot-coms, lower base salaries, and that might surprise a lot of people, but cash is king in these environments. Everybody wants to save money. If you're looking for a higher base salary, do not go to a dot-com company. Long hours, you will work, you will get paid less, and you will work more. High risk, you don't know if they're going to be here today or gone tomorrow. I mean, ask anybody at drcoop.com. And also lack of structure. If you're looking for structure, if you're looking for somebody to provide you with a job description, do not go to a dot-com. Typically, you see, you know, I have to do A, B, C, and D at a dot-com. It's A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, and take out the trash. So there's tremendous amount of, you're not going to have that kind of structure within that type of environment. The government, real quick. It's a patriotic feeling to work in the government. You get great benefits. Everybody likes working for America, if you're from America. You have leading edge technology. The government a lot of times gets things quicker than everybody else, and all the technology vendors are trying to sell something into the government. And the last thing is there's high integrity. You work for the government. You know, people often equate that to high integrity and good ethical values. The cons, compensation, they don't pay well. There's also, there's plenty of structure. You have to answer to everybody. You get a lot of because I said so type answers. Working for the government does not provide you with any commercial experience. That might be hard to translate. Some companies that do either commercial consulting work or are in the commercial market space only look for people who have commercial experience. So this might be hard to transition. And the last thing is, I don't know if anybody's ever been in Washington, D.C., or around 8 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but beltway traffic is a bear. Security consulting, four different areas. So you have the big fives, the systems integrators, the pure plays, and the government consulting firms. The big fives, you cannot hurt your career by going to a big five. Nobody ever set their career back by working at a big five environment. It's a tremendous resume builder, and people definitely look for that. In fact, the first thing I always get when we're looking at CISO positions is, has the person ever worked in a big five environment, which is traditionally good. Compensation is normally high. These folks have a lot of money to spend. Top flight clients, good work environments, professional, good technology, and perks. I mean, and if you've worked in a big five before, you know that you stay in nice hotels, you eat at good restaurants. If you work at these other, you know, other companies, you're on, you know, you have per diems that are relatively small. You know, you might be sharing a room with a colleague, and it's not the best environment from that perspective. Cons, it's a structured career path. You're a staff consultant for 2 years. You're a senior for three. You're a manager for four. You're a senior manager for five, and you're a partner. And then by the time you're a partner, you know, you're working there forever. Mature security practices. These practices have been built in 1996, 1997, 1998. So there's not a lot of opportunity at the top. However, one thing to note is that there's been a lot of turnover within Big Five environments, so they are continually looking for higher level people now. B&B, there it is again. The place that you'll find the most bureaucracy and bullshit is definitely within a Big Five environment. And the last thing is that they are still accounting firms. Security is a business, it's a main business unit there, but all in all, they still get their bread buttered from being accountants. The systems integrators, also big companies, stable companies, really good salaries. And also telecommuting is acceptable. They don't care where you live as long as you live close to an airport. Cons. They're flat organizations with interchangeable parts. Career paths are generally not that high in these environments, therefore the larger base salaries. Also, You will travel a bunch. There's very little stock options or chance at equity. And also, it's a very individualistic atmosphere. A lot of the times you are working on an island, you're not working as part of a team. The pure plays. When I say pure plays, these are vendor independent consulting firms. Talking about companies that have recently thrust onto the market space like Foundstone, like AtStake, like Garden, like Securify. These companies provide vendor independent information security consulting solutions. High growth potential, excitement. Whenever you're growing something, it is exciting to be there. There is no glass ceiling. You can contribute. It's a good thing. Equity. These companies are just forming this year. Most of these people are less than 100 employees. If you can get equity in a company when you are a double-digit employee, take the chance. And the other thing is this, their only business is information security. That's all that they do. And they do security consulting. So you have to be an integral part. Without their people, they don't make money. Without them making money, they don't have stock. And the CEOs don't want their stocks to be worthless. Cons, lower salaries. You are going to either take a pay cut if you're at a high level, or you're going to be lateraled in. We tell all of our candidates pretty much that if you're going to look at one of these opportunities, don't expect to make a lot of money initially. Cash is king to these VCs, and cash is king to these companies, so they will not spend a lot of money, and they will not give a lot of money out up front traditionally. Lack of role definition, this is another thing. If you need structure, this is not the place for you. They will not tell you that 30% of your time you'll be doing architecture work, 40% of the time you're doing A&P work, 20% of the time you're doing practice management. You will do what's necessary to get the job done. And the last thing is this, is the business is driven by VCs. And everybody says, well, VCs, they're our friends. VCs are probably the most cutthroat people in business. Understand that. They want to own your company. They're in business for three reasons: to make money, to make money, and to make money. And they only get compensated if they create some sort of an equity event, whether that's an IPO, whether that's a merge, or whether that's a sale. So as far as the VCs are concerned, you are a money-making vehicle, and they will drive your company that way. And the last thing is government consulting. Again, you get to work with leading edge technologies, also good patriotic feelings, good resume builder. I mean, people do look for people who have worked in government consulting environments. The cons: cheap client, cheap compensation. The government doesn't pay as much as commercial, so therefore they can't afford to pay their people like the commercial folks do. They're flat organizations. There's not much of a career path. And a lot of times they hire and fire based on contracts. And what that means is this, is that when they get a contract, the government consulting firms, these Beltway bandits, they get in rush to hire. I need 20 people. Now they lose that contract. Now they start firing people. So you have to understand that a lot of the work there is contract driven. If you work with a government consulting firm, you should really understand, are they hiring you because they have bigger plans, or they're hiring you because they have a big contract? Transition into the product company space. We'll talk about the information security products and general product companies. In the information security product space, transferable experience into the other software spaces. Compensation is based on performance. There's good bonus plans. Good products equal success. If you have confidence in the product, the company will normally do well. If you believe in the product and the product is accepted, your company will normally do pretty well. The best positions. Product companies are in two businesses. They're in the business of developing products and selling products. If you want to be as close to these functions as possible. The cons. Everything revolves around the product. It's all product driven. Every quarter you have to hit revenue. Everything is driven about the sale of the product. The worst thing that you can do, the worst position that you can have in a product company, is to be a consultant. Because, kid yourself if you will, you are selling a product. You are not selling service. You are selling solutions around the product, and they can tell you, no, we deliver the best available solution. When your client is looking at you, they're saying, you know what? These people are telling me the best available solution that supports their product. General product companies. I talk about these companies like Sun and Cisco and IBM. Great resources. They have tremendous, tremendous resources. There are large companies. They can offer a lot. Security happens to be the hot ticket in their minds. Their clients are screaming they've already bought the product. So their services aren't based on the product. They've already bought the product. Now they have to integrate the product. So they said instead of going to the integrators, they'd like you to come to them. So they're throwing a lot of money in this space. They have the ability to pay high base salaries, give good stock options, good bonus plans. And also the other thing that's very good is you have a good horizontal career path. Within these large companies, there are a lot of good internal opportunities. In a 6 or 7 year career in one of these big companies, you could have three different jobs. You could go from consulting to marketing to sales engineering, however you might want to do it, but there is a lot of diversity, which is good. The cons, they're still product companies. Everything does revolve around the product. The other thing is this, the security is another business line to them. It's what's hot now. Chances are this is going to be hot for a while, so we're all pretty good. But if it's not hot for a while, with one red line, they'll either reorg it or reposition it. So you have to be able to watch out for that and design your career path around that. The newest section of the market, the ASPs, the application service providers, managed service providers, and the telecommunication firms. The pros, there's a lot of career diversity. You know, they have operation centers, they have engineering, they have consulting, they have R&D. You can get your hands on a lot of different cookie jars. They're also, these companies have a commitment to security. They're building it in as a marketing advantage. Anytime you flip through a CIO magazine and somebody's talking about an application service provider, the first thing they say is availability. The next thing they say is security. So there's a commitment to this, and they're trying to position themselves with security as a major play. It is a growing marketplace. The market caps on these stocks have really yet to mature. And the last thing is just the compensation plans. It's a nice blend of equity, bonus, good base salaries, those types of deals. The cons is redundancy. It's a managed service provider. You are providing one service. Sure, there are going to be some nuances to the integration. There are probably going to be a lot, but you are providing the same thing over and over and over again. That's the business model. The market is still forming. Some of these companies will succeed if they're funded well. If they're not funded well, these companies will go by the wayside. And I think that also comes in the area of high risk. I hope that gave you a pretty good, some bullet points about how you should think of your current marketplace. I'll take questions after the show. How you should look at the current marketplace and maybe how those affect you in your current positions now, maybe give you some things to think about. How and where do you find the right opportunity for you? I guess there are four or five real sources of looking for an opportunity. And first is the internet. The internet is a wonderful place to buy a product. If you want to buy a car, you can go on the internet and you enter the make, you enter the model, you enter the color, you enter the engine type, you enter the stereo system, and you have a car. Point and click and do it. You are not products. The boxes on the monster.coms and the jobs.com and the techies.com cannot talk to you about career path, cannot talk to you about where do you want your career to be, cannot talk to you about some things that are important to you. The internet is great at filling jobs. It is very lousy at building careers. Networking, getting jobs through friends. This is very good because you can work with your friends. Normally people who like to work together, who get along with each other, and if they like to work together, it's a good thing. This industry is probably the smallest industry. You could play 6 degrees of separation with this industry probably better than any other place. Everybody knows everybody, and everybody has some sort of opinion on other people. Now, what happens when networking and finding jobs through friends? First thing is this, you have to understand is that what happens is you'll have a group of friends, and one of these friends will go to another company and they'll say, hey, we're hiring. We're going to give you a referral bonus for your friends. I get you an extra $5,000 and you can split it with your friends. Now, when that person's approaching you about a position, are they motivated by the fact that this would really be a great thing for your career path, or I'm going to get me $5,000? What makes your friends experts on your careers? Recruitment firms, general recruitment firms. Let's start about this. Internal corporate recruiters. Internal corporate recruiters have one thing in mind. They are incentivized to fill the jobs in their company. If you desire to work for a specific company, and that's the company that you want to work for, the corporate recruiter is your best friend. They understand that environment to a T. However, that corporate recruiter doesn't understand what's happening around them. They don't understand what makes firm X better than firm Y and firm Z. They can only see one thing, is what does their client need? And their client is their internal client. They are compensated by bonus plans and base salary raises by the more people that they put in their environment. So they are more motivated by filling jobs than building your career. General search firms. If you're a technology generalist and you think you consider security as a part of what you do, this is a very good place for you. They can maybe give you opportunities that will leverage your information security skills into other areas of technology, where maybe somebody needs more of a network management person who understands information security. This is a good place. However, they are not experts. They do not understand this marketplace. They a lot of times try to be everything to all people. You guys spend a lot of time at conferences, reading books, configuring technology, discovering exploits, spending time on the net. The information security is your passion. You know it, you live it, you invest the time in it. You owe it to yourself to work with people who spend the same amount of time understanding the industry, understanding the trends, understanding compensation. You have to find people, you would need to find people who take as much interest in this industry as you do your career. An information security recruitment specialist in general can give you a more broader perspective, even though that they a lot of times they'll represent 10, 15, 20 different clients, they won't bombard you with all 20. They'll listen to what it is that you want to do. And then they might present you with two or three different opportunities that fit your needs based on what you've told them and what they understand about the industry. It gives you a more targeted approach to interviewing, and it gives you a more targeted approach to your time. The first question in my firm that we ask anybody who calls us or anybody that we speak to, what is it that you want to do? Can you describe the most ideal position for you? And what we do at that point is we try to find it. Factors. You want to consider certain factors when you're searching. And they're very simple. I mean, the first one is career path. You should always be looking one job ahead. Whenever you take another job or you start to look, you should say, where is this job going to take me? Where will I be positioned? In the next 3 or 4 years, Chief Information Security Officer will be a position that will be highly compensated and will be highly sought after. Many people should, if you're in that position, you should position yourself in something that will give you the exposure that will enable you to get to that leap, whether it's that position or it's another position. Confidence in the company. You have to have confidence in the company. Do you believe in what the company does? Do you trust these people? Do you think they have some good ideas? Are they bright? Compensation. What are they going to pay me? And normally compensation is normally the first thing on the list. I always think that compensation should be either number 3 or number 4. Quality of life. Quality of life is very simple. You work, you're going to work 8, 10, 12, 14 hours, whatever it might be, but you have a life outside of work. How will this job affect the quality of my life and my leisure time? And the last thing people should always consider is the caliber of people. This is an industry where people are constantly exchanging ideas and sharing. If you work with bright people, some of that will rub off. If you do not work with bright people, if you work with a vacuum, you can only learn from what you get on the web, what you get from conferences, and what you think of. So the better caliber of people that are there, the better off that you're going to be to learn more. Questions that need, you know, everybody with their interview, everybody, you know, they ask questions, and all questions are good. I think that the one thing I see is that I encourage the candidates, I encourage you to all ask questions and get your information. It's better off, there is no foolish question. I hate to sound like my third grade teacher, but there isn't any foolish questions out there. There are only foolish people who don't ask questions. You talk about things. One of the questions you should ask for is the corporate focus. What, we've said this a couple times today, what business is the company in? What is the main function of the business? Do they sell services? Do they sell products? How close are you to the main function of the business? There is one real rule. The closer you are to the bottom line of any business, the more money you make, the more profitable, the more valuable you are to that company. So if your position is integral to success, I'll give you an example. In a services business, their only form of revenue is reselling consultants. It's very simple. Number of consultants times hours times billing rate equals profit. That's what they do. So you have to realize how integral you are to the business, how close are you to the revenue transaction. Also, you should understand what the company's commitment is to information security. Where are the budgets? You should look at hiring trends. Traditionally, if companies are committed to information security, they're looking to hire more than one person because, as we all know, no one person can be the entire information security department. So hiring trends will also reflect that. The next thing you look at management. You look at management and you look at who's running the company. Now, in a company, it's not going to matter if Steve Jobs is running Apple or if Bill Gates is running Microsoft, that's not going to affect you as an information security professional. But what's going to affect you is in a smaller company. Who is the CEO, especially these startups and these dot-coms and these newer companies, what is the person's track record? Have they done this before? Have they been successful? Have they made people money? Or, as opposed to the person who's done it before, there are two types of CEOs that really make a lot of sense in this space. It's either the person who's done it before and has a track record, or that person who's passionate, who understands the space, understands the nuances, and is a visionary. Both of these people are great people to head up companies, because normally if you find a CEO who is passionate and knows about this industry, down the road they will be able to attract that person who can sell the company up through Wall Street. The other thing you have to look at is talk about management, the business unit. I have a friend who works at a big five firm. He always says this to me. He says, I love the firm that I work for. However, the guy that I report into, I can't stand. The firm a lot of times is the person you report into. So you could work for this great entity, but if your boss is a jerk, you're going to have a problem. Also, you want to hopefully work for a boss that upper management embraces and has a career path at the company. When you work for somebody with that corporate, that the corporation gets behind, chances are you'll get things. You'll get training budgets. You'll get technology. You'll get raises because they look at this person as a shining star and they want to continue the career growth of that person. Commitment. You talk about commitment. Commitment is, where do people really see security? Is it a cost factor? Is it a revenue factor? How much are they going to budget? What's the allocation? Compensation. Everybody wants to always talk about compensation. When you speak about compensation, you have to look at, you have to look at three or four different things. First of all, you have to look at the base salary. You should ask questions, when do I get raises? What are they based on? Are they prorated? Bonuses. What is the bonus based on? When do I get it? When is it paid out? Sign-on bonuses. Let's talk about sign-on bonuses. Everybody likes to talk about sign-on bonuses because in some, glimmer, everybody believes that, you see the sporting events, you talk about, $500,000 sign-on bonuses. I had somebody ask me for a Winnebago once. You get it all. And companies generally do not pay sign-on bonuses. And as a rule, you're better off getting more base salary than sign-on bonuses. We can always, at the end of the time, whenever I'm negotiating a contract for somebody, when we negotiate the contract, we always can have room to maneuver on sign-on bonuses. We can always give that, and we can always make that up. But base salaries are pretty much carved in stone. Traditionally, when people do pay for sign-on bonuses, what they pay is they pay for people when, if you owe your ex-company money, if you had a sign-on bonus, if you had a relocation expense, they will make that up in order to get you and bring you on board. That is really not a sign-on bonus. That is an interest-free loan. The other thing that people pay sign-on bonuses for is if you have to pay back training expenses or anything you might owe back to the other company. But that's something that you have to really address up front in your recruitment process. The last thing that you need to talk about in this day and age is you have to talk about stock options. You should ask yourself questions about the stock options. What are they worth? What is your strike price? What is the vesting schedule? Traditionally, there are four-year vesting schedules. However, what you're seeing now is you're seeing a lot of three-year vesting schedules. And you're seeing creative compensation packages. In stock option plans, normally, there's after the first year, a percentage of your options will vest. After that, they either vest quarterly, monthly, annually, or sometimes even now, I have a client right now that the stock options vest daily after the first year. Basically, that rewards you for every day that you've worked, you are credited from equity. If that stock goes up, you know, a point a day and you have 10,000 options, you make $10,000. If it goes down, well, shoot, you better work a little bit harder. The other thing you have to talk about when, you know, when you're looking at a company is you have, also have to look at their benefits plans. Their benefits plans are a portion of your compensation. I think benefits plans are fairly generic, and I think they really should only come into play when there are special circumstances in making a decision. Personal growth. What is the company's commitment to training? What is the commitment to education? I just got off the phone with a candidate that we had just placed. And you know what he resigned? He resigned when his superior told him that he was not allowing him to go to DEF CON and he wouldn't pay the $50 registration fee, the $100 for the hotel, and the $200 for the plane ticket. He said, look, if I'm not worth $350 to this person, I'm resigning. And he resigned today. Training, you owe it to yourselves. This market is changing. Technologies are being introduced, wireless technologies, you name it. You have to keep abreast of it. You need a company that will invest, will send you to conferences like this, that will enable you to get technology training as these new technologies do evolve. That has to be an important question that you do ask. Quality of life. There are many factors involving quality of life. Whether it's travel. Some people love to travel, some people can't travel. Some people have to relocate to, you know, enjoy, you know, for certain reasons. Quality of life can take on so many different things. Your hours, your work day. You have commitments that are going to prohibit you from really, you know, succeeding within the company. You have to look at, how will this job affect the way that I live? Whether it comes down to commuting time. I mean, you talk to anybody in New York, Washington, D.C., Boston, San Francisco, L.A., most major cities, they're going to ask you about the commute. Sitting in 2 hours of rush hour traffic is not good for you. So you have to understand if a company is going to be flexible, if they're going to be flexible, will enable you to work, you know, as opposed to working at 9 o'clock, can you come in the office at 11 and leave at 7 if you wanted to? Are they flexible? Will they work with you? Normally, if a company is willing to work with you, that kind of shows you their attitude towards people. So the more flexible a company is, the better off that they're going to be flexible in the long run. The last thing you should really ask, you should ask yourself, and you should really ask the company too, what are my career path options? Vertically, when you talk about a vertical career path, that's internally into the organization. Do I have a chance to move up? Do you guys normally promote from outside or do you promote from within? What are my chances to grow with this company? Can I position my career from this one angle to get into these other different business units? Horizontally, the things you have to look at horizontally, where will this career position me? You're always thinking a job ahead. You have to look at your career as a springboard. The next time you make a job, the next time you move jobs or look at a job, where will this job position me for the next career down the road? How will I take advantage of it from a financial perspective, from a career perspective, from a happiness perspective? I want to leave you with a couple thoughts and just a couple of observances and conclude the presentation. 2 weeks ago, I was in New York City, and I went to the HOPE conference, and it's Hackers of the Planet Earth. It was H2K this year. And when you get to that conference, and if any of you are staying for DEF CON, you'll see it. The people who attend the conferences and are passionate about this space, they do not do it for money. They do it because they like to share information. They do it because they enjoy it. They do it because they can. Unfortunately, everybody sitting here at some point, we're mercenaries. We work for paychecks. If you take people who are extremely passionate about what it is that they do, they will keep coming at it. And because they will keep coming at it, and they will increase in numbers, and they were, their zeal will increase, and their knowledge will increase, and through technology, their network will increase. By doing all those things, it will ensure us all plenty of jobs for the future. You do not have to worry about finding your next position. The positions are out there. You have to worry about finding the right position for you. You have to worry about positioning yourself correctly in your careers so that the right positions, the right compensations, and the right career paths stay available and become available. I don't know how much time we have for questions, but I will answer.
Hi, this is Scott Barber, Secure Network Consulting. I just got one quick question for you that you didn't touch on. It's kind of a surprise. Certifications, CISSP namely, what effect does that have on the candidate and then also for the managers in the room? What effect or what should they be looking for in their candidates as far as certifications go?
It's a very good question. Let's talk about the CISSP really quick. I get to take my hat off to the people at ISC Squared who've really developed this certification over the past 3 or 4 years. In the beginning, this was grandfathered in. Now they've redone the curriculum, and I mean, I think this getting that certification is an excellent thing at this point. Companies are starting to pay bonuses for people who are CISSP certified. How does that affect you if you're a hiring manager? You know, certifications are a funny thing. Everybody can put many different letters next to their name, but it really comes down to what it is that you can do. I always tell people that your certifications aren't going to determine your self-worth. What you know, your knowledge, the way you handle problems, your experience, those are things that will affect your compensation and it will affect your career growth. Certifications are great to have. Corporations should look to hire people with certifications, but it's not a necessity, but it's something that should be considered and definitely looked at. Did I answer your question? Good. Well, okay. Because we don't really deal with a lot of independent consultants, it's not part of what I would consider a lot of, you know, a lot of this was focused on career paths. However, from an independent, Tot Technologies, wireless technology, I was just at the Gartner Group Security Conference. Wireless technologies, anything with wireless, wireless PKI, anything dealing with PDAs, anything dealing with WAP-enabled protocols, those are the hottest things out there. You know, PKI, I think, digital signatures, it was just, you know, I think Diana's going to speak on digital signatures and privacy. That's big. It was just mandated by the government. Clinton just signed the bill. I can imagine that that space will take off very, very soon. So as an independent consultant, and also, you know what, firewalls, the good old firewall. People need firewall help. I think I can take one more.
What would you consider a typical office? Yeah, there was a time 20 years ago. These days, that's not necessary.
You know, that's something that is a new phenomena. You know, it's a new phenomena. How long you stay at a company. Stay at a company as long as, you know, it's not a bad thing to stay at a company for a long time. In fact, you know, a lot of times I tell people that the best move is not to make a move. The best move is to just kind of stay where you're at. And if it's a good job, unless you're running, you should always run to something. You should never run away from something. So the idea of staying at a company, if the company is good and you are learning and you're up top of the industry and your job is not stale and you're moving internally through the maze in the corporation, you know, patience is a skill that not many people have these days. And the more patient you are, you know, and the more trust and respect that you can have within a company, a lot of times the more value will be provided. So as long as you're continuing to move up and a little bit side to side, staying with a company for 20 years isn't a problem. Thank you very much. You've been a wonderful audience. And if you have any questions, I'll be available afterwards. And best of luck to everybody.